You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We have Rachel Brown here, the CEO and founder of Sustainable Business Network. Hi Rachel, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Fantastic. Can you please tell me a little bit about the Sustainable Business Network?
Sure. We're an organisation that was started, I started it in 2002. And the whole reason for being is essentially just to make the world a better place, but doing that through business and focusing on what we can do here in New Zealand. And our kind of mission is to, you know, show that we can do it here and then help the rest of the world do the kind of cool things that we can do.
And what have been some of the major achievements for you since you started?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, well, this morning, for example, I've just been out as part of our Million Metres Dreams project, and we've been working with some of our members on pulling out weeds along the Rosebank Road Peninsula. And we've got this mission of doing a whole restoration all the way along that area. So I guess the stuff that really spins my wheels is when we get involved in real, tangible collaboration projects. And that's just one of them. We do and have done heaps.
I like that. It's cool getting involved in projects that you can kind of see the payoff as you go along. Hey, it's like, oh, yeah, look at the difference. We can. It's tangible. We can see it. And it's a nice kind of like battle to get involved in.
That's right. And there's heaps of different ones. We work in restoration, and that's one of the restoration projects that we do. But what we're trying to do in restoration is wake the business community up to the opportunity that they can be part of solving this stuff. You know, businesses are often seen as the enemy to a lot of the environmental and social issues, but they can equally be the solver of a lot of these issues, right?
That was one of my curiosities about the Sustainable Business Network, is that, I mean, the idea of sustainability and business sort of seem like a dichotomy. You know, it's like, do they fit together? Do they not? How do those two, they seem at opposite ends of the scale.
Yeah.
I mean, in your experience, what's the solution to bringing those two together, or, you know, how do they fit together?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, because I'm a, you know, an environmentalist and a socialist from way back, essentially. So for me, when I was growing up, we used to say that business was a bad word. You know, if you worked in business, you were ripping off the planet and you're ripping off people. But as I got older, I started working in, well, my first job was working in councils, and I realised that businesses had a choice. They could be, in fact, really bad for the planet and bad for people, or they could be part of making the world a better place. So things like organic food, renewable energy, electric vehicles, bike share systems, all of those come from businesses.
Yeah, that's a good point. So kind of going off that, we've got this kind of flourishing business around the world of one, electric cars like Elon Musk, but also this idea of trading carbon credits, you know, for businesses, but also for governments and for whole countries. I mean, what are your thoughts about the trade of carbon or carbon sequestration?
Yeah, there's this hilarious site that was put up a wee while ago, which was called Cheat Neutral. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I haven't.
It was a piss take, basically, of the whole carbon market. But what they were trying to say is, you know, if you're in a relationship and you have an affair with somebody, it's okay as long as you buy your wife flowers. And that's a little bit about what carbon has felt like at times, right? That businesses are just let off the hook and said, go and make your carbon emissions, but just put some, you know, plant some trees over here and continue doing your business as usual. That's the bit I don't like about it. I think the stuff that Elon Musk is doing, which is making electric vehicles attractive and hopefully more affordable as the price drops, is the kind of stuff that we want to get more businesses to do. But the good things about the carbon market is that when it's a genuine carbon market, you will see more, and we need this, more restoration of forests and those kind of things, which they really do have to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. From an ecological perspective, it's really important.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the carbon market should be helping that funding go into those kind of areas if it's done properly. Unfortunately, to date, I don't think it's been taken seriously at all.
It hasn't really got the support, I feel, necessary to really get it to that point of being super beneficial for restoration projects. I mean, there's that link between like what you're doing, what you're talking about before with replanting Rosebank Road. I mean, you could count that as carbon credits, couldn't you?
You can. It's a little bit hard to get the accounting right. It's a really complicated science, carbon, locking up carbon in soil or locking up carbon in trees. It's actually quite complex, but yes, there is a carbon offset there.
So a sort of trade-off there. That's a good discussion. Carbon credits does my head. I just wrote a report on carbon sequestration rates in trees, and like you say, it is incredibly complicated to get those estimates. Mm. Let's kind of branch off from that and maybe talk a little bit more about international politics. Things are quite tense at the moment. I mean, you've got the wars in Syria, you've got Donald Trump denying climate change even exists. How can business practices maybe pick up the political slack that's sort of happening in the world at the moment?
Well, I guess, some people are getting really scared. I mean, it is scary. What Trump is doing is really, really disturbing.
Totally.
And his backtracking on the climate change agenda, I think, is going to have a worse impact for the American economy than it will for the rest of us, because actually the rest of the world's just going to get on and keep doing renewables and electric vehicles and carbon offsetting and all those kind of things. They'll still happen.
Mm.
And businesses who have taken this stuff strategically and taken it seriously are going to charge away. And if the American economy isn't seeing this as the way of their future, they're going to go backwards, because the rest of the world's going forwards and the American economy isn't. So I think, businesses are coming together on an international platform or two. You know, there's the We Mean Business Coalition, which is the massive companies around the world coming together on climate change. And there's a bunch of those. There's also the Sustainable Development Goals, which came out of the United Nations, which has united, people right across the world on some common goals in that space. So those things are still happening, and they're happening on a global level. So, and what that means for New Zealand businesses is there is certainly a call to do more. Even if America slows down and goes backwards, it's still going to be of value for our businesses to have an offer in the sustainability space.
To kind of be a leader. And that's another thing. I mean, New Zealand's got this identity of being clean, green New Zealand, but lately we've really been slipping on that sort of that image. And I think we've got an opportunity with the current international political climate to change that and to, really get back to being that. Can you think of any examples that you've maybe worked on or involved with at the moment that are really pushing that message?
The Wadeable Waters call that was made a few years ago by the government, it was probably a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, when they said, we're going to make all New Zealand's rivers wadeable.
Wadeable,
absolute aspiration zero. Like a negative zero aspiration for New Zealand. So that's a big reason why our Million Metres crowdfunding campaign has become so successful, is because people have gone, no, our waterways need to be good again, they need to be healthy, and we're willing to contribute to it.
Mm.
So that's one example of us pulling together. But we also have things here on creating a good food nation, which is a project that we're just trying to get off the ground at the moment, which is really, how do we help people, the very large and growing number of low-income families, have access to healthy food?
Yeah, are you working with the Auckland City Council Love Food, Hate Waste at all on that?
Yep. So that's part of it. That's much more directed at home. So once food's in your home, how do you use it most efficiently, which is great. I'm really interested in how do we look at the model of food waste that comes through manufacturers and growers. At the moment, there's still, maybe about 40% of the food that's grown doesn't get to the end consumer anyway.
Is that cosmetic reasons or something like stupid like that?
Well, no, some of it's really practical. Some of it's cosmetic and some of it's just glut time. So when the growers have a massive glut in kiwi fruit, for example, it'll end up in a pack house, and then if it doesn't get out the door within X number of days, it ends up being waste.
Oh, so they just have so much produce at a time that it floods the market and they just can't get it all out.
They can't shift it, yeah. So how do we bust those models and make that food waste, which currently either goes to pig farms or into compost, into a edible and accessible food? So there's these kind of big systemic failings in that space that we could, if we could pull this group together and start collaborating, maybe we could solve some of that healthy food.
That really excites me, because I always had this idea that if we treated our systems a little bit more like how we would if we were on a small farm, and take some of those principles of having no waste and, you make a jam when you've got too much strawberries, or find something you can do with kiwi fruits like you were talking about before that preserves them and gives them more life. And I mean, can we take some of those principles and apply them to the system?
Absolutely. And there's stacks of neat examples of that happening around the country. I know in Wanaka they have this cool seasonal fruit moment where they all come together. I think it's based around apples. And they, you know, they share recipes and they pickle things and they bottle things. And, you know, it's great fun as a community activity, but it's also massively efficient for the resource use. Anyway.
That's inspiring. I like that. I like that people are getting the community thing as well as important. I think bringing the community together for an event is great.
Yeah. So that's an example. There's also, in terms of that resource efficiency stuff, we run a program called the Circular Economy. Have you heard of that?
No. Oh, briefly, but please tell me more.
Yeah, so it's really about how do we, you know, as the population continues to grow globally, so like 2050 we might have 9 billion people on this planet, which means resource scarcity is even more of an issue that we need to get our heads around. So if we were going to be massively resource efficient, how do we create what's called a circular economy instead of the make waste model, which is, you know, take stuff out of the ground, turn it into a product, and then throw it into a landfill?
Mm-hmm.
How do we create products and services that don't end up having that linear flow, but rather have a circular flow once they're created? So that looks at things like the sharing economy. So rather than, you know, everybody owning their own car, for example, you might have a car share scheme. Or not everybody needs to have their own drill, because you might use it 2 or 3 times a year. Maybe your neighbourhood gets together and shares those resources. So there's a bunch of ways that we can rethink the way that we use our precious resources so that they're much more efficient. So we do a lot of work around that space too. So we're looking at things like big refurbishments of offices, for example, which tends to be a massive time for generation of waste. How do we rethink that whole model so that we don't end up with a massive flow of waste?
So when you say waste in offices, what's the main thing there? Like, I'm thinking paper waste.
No, so if you think about refurbishing an office, it'll be things like, you know, furniture, soft furnishings, carpet, blinds, all sorts of stuff, light fittings, tables.
And people just chuck that out?
Well, at the moment, it's really hard to know what to do. If you're dealing with large scale, large volumes coming out of refurbs, it's really hard to get rid of that stuff, because there's so much new stuff around and the new stuff is relatively cheap.
Right, yeah.
It's a lot of that stuff ends up going into landfill.
We want to avoid that. Landfills. Landfills really at capacity. But stop putting things in the ground.
Yeah, and it's in the ground for many generations.
That whole concept of that being a solution just baffles me now.
It does. It does. And so we're going, there's got to be a smarter way of doing this, right? There's got to be a way of taking these resources seriously, not just thinking, oh, quickly empty an office, it goes away somewhere. Well, actually, it goes away into our land.
Which we want to use in the future.
That's right. There's better uses for land than hiding our rubbish in it.
That kind of, it's a whole chicken and the egg thing. I mean, for me, it's like, do you tackle the landfill issue, or do you tackle the production issue and to stop producing things that stick around for thousands of years?
We have to get right back to how we design everything. And the big challenge is that the way that we've designed things has all been based on this idea that we've got an endless flow of raw materials and people.
Yeah.
And so we use everything as quickly as we can.
But that's not true, is it? We don't have either of those things.
Yeah. And also what we've discovered is that particularly for toxic things, if they end up in the landfill, they're there for a long time, and the effect on our own health and the planetary health is really bad, and it can be bad for a long time. So we have to really rethink everything, which means that we have to redesign everything so that anything that's toxic never ends up in our biological systems, and the stuff that's reusable can be reused. That's a design challenge.
Yeah, call to arms to designers in the world.
Absolutely, all those young people at university, you can redesign everything, so it's way better.
Yeah, there's hope for design. Design will solve all our
designers
problems.
Designers are the coolest.
I reckon. Completely agree.
Yeah, especially if they learn how to design with people in mind.
Yeah, that's how good design's done, people in mind.
That's right.
And the planet.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much, Rachel Brown.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.